Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. I'm Alan Chartok. This week, more indictments in the state legislature. Who are they and what are they supposed to have done? We'll talk with Fred Dicker about Cuomo's plan of accountability in state government. And New York State's workforce is slowly dwindling. Pretty soon there'll be more jobs than people to fill them. Why is this happening? What can be done about it? Finally, we'll talk to Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen about the state of education in New York. This and much more, it's all coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. The population nationwide is an aging one. Baby boomers are no longer breaking into new fields, and unemployment is at record low levels. All this adds up to a dwindling workforce for entry-level and service positions in the public sector. But those empty desks need to be filled. The New York State Civil Service Department has a plan to avert what could become a crisis. Bruce Robertson has the story.
The potential crisis is that the state of New York is faced with a shortage of trained and qualified workers. With so-called baby boomers moving into middle age, and the fact that some jobs have neither the competitive salaries nor the appeal of certain private sector jobs, the state now faces a challenge: how to attract new young workers. Civil Service Commissioner Walter D. Broadmax has a plan.
Well, one of the things we're doing is all tied up in the notion of what we call workforce planning, which is nothing more than strategically thinking about managing the workforce, giving the chief executive an opportunity to make the necessary shifts and changes in the workforce that would be necessary to keep New York State on a sound and productive footing. So that is the wrapping in which all this is being set in motion. What we hope to achieve by doing all this is to be able to restructure various jobs in the state workforce that would such that they would be attractive to people to come in. And part of the way you would do that is to try to build in some upward mobility for people. So you may come in, say, at the bottom, but over the course of a career, by restructuring some of our jobs, building in opportunities for training and retraining, that you could make this attractive and also really provide good, sound career opportunities for people.
Mm. Do you see this as potentially a crisis?
Well, I think the way I would respond to that is I talk to various of the commissioners. I think they see themselves right now on the front edge of a crisis. Another way to say it is they see themselves in a mild crisis situation, and for some of them, maybe even a moderate crisis situation. So the idea is to try to get out in front of a clearly coming crisis as much as we possibly can, so that we might be able to manage our response, if you will, to what clearly is going to be a crisis situation.
I'm sure that anyone listening and beginning to understand this perhaps is astounded almost to learn that there should be a shortage of workers and that the economy should be out of balance on that end, particularly when we still have a relatively high rate of unemployment and the economy is going through some very bizarre fluctuations. That's almost the last thing that you would think that we'd have. It would be a shortage of workers. How do you suppose people really view this and understand what's going on?
Well, I think it all goes back to our understanding of what we call the structurally unemployed. I think this is the greatest opportunity since World War II for the state and the national government as well, but my primary focus right now is to talk about what the state of New York can do. is to what I call dip into surplus labor pools of the structurally unemployed or people who have been severely underemployed and bring them actively into the workforce. A secondary opportunity and effect from this is that it really gives us a meaningful way to deal with the question of diversity in terms of our workforce in a much more meaningful way, in that you really are in a situation where there'll be a much less of a conflict around the notion of infusing the workforce with larger groups of women and minorities, in that they are going to make up 80% of that available workforce that we're going to be trying to tap.
Civil Service Commissioner Walter D. Broadnax. He told me that the state actually will save money by adding more to the workforce. Not only will the unemployment rates go down, but new taxpayers will be added. To obtain more information about available jobs across the state, Broadnax suggests you either contact the Civil Service Department or the particular department in which you may have an interest. This is Bruce Robertson.
This is Don Decker. The Republican leadership in the state Senate does not need to be reminded by Governor Cuomo that the recent stock market difficulties are a cause for budgetary caution in New York State. Republican Jerry McLaughlin of the Senate Finance Committee says it's too early to get a clear picture of how October's stock market setbacks will affect the budget this year and next. However, he did acknowledge some restraint will be necessary. McLaughlin was responding to Governor Cuomo's warning to state legislators that the legislature must exercise some budgetary belt-tightening next year due to this fall's economic uncertainties. This is what the governor had to say to Alan Chartok.
The stock market went down cataclysmically. Everybody is predicting slower growth, and the growth wasn't going to be exciting to begin with, but slower growth than was anticipated before the stock market crash. There will be an effect. New York City has already announced that it's cutting back on programs and commitments. Remember that this state is heavily dependent upon the financing industry, the investment banking industry, and all of that is disproportionately damaged by what's happening in the stock market. It happened on October 19th. The market has gone up and down since then, most recently down, and we have to be prudent. We're not going to raise taxes, but we're not going to be able to cut taxes anymore next year. We're not going to be engaged in exciting, dramatic new expenditures. I hear some Republicans saying we should have a new program that pays all the local governments, even wealthy ones, incidentally, counties that have a lot of wealth. We should pick up all their garbage for them. That could cost you more than $1 billion a year. It's great political talk to run around with your local constituencies and tell your local officials, don't worry, I'll get Albany to pick up our garbage. We won't have to worry about dealing with this landfill problem. We won't have to worry about, building another landfill. We'll ask Albany to do it. Well, I'm afraid that will be irresponsible talk next year. It'll be all we can do to deal with our roads and bridges, all we can do to meet the commitments we've already made, all we can do to keep the tax cut that we voted last year. I don't think anybody should start telling their people, hey, we're in for big spending, especially since this is an election year and I want to look good. So I'm going to go to Albany and spend a lot of money to make you happy.
Is there a little inconsistency between you, Governor, I say this respectfully, and,
yes,
the Lieutenant Governor on this? Because he's been talking about a new initiative to help localities pick up the garbage costs.
He's absolutely correct, and there will be new initiatives. There will not be vast new spending programs. Mm-hmm. And I doubt very much that you ever heard the Lieutenant Governor say, we're going to spend $1 billion a year.
No.
No, he's talking about an exciting new agenda of active help for local governments by the state. And that's true. And Tom Jawling, our new environmental commissioner, has been working on that for a long time. It will not be a massive handout to local governments, however.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to help without, you know, imposing upon yourself a burden with a slowed down economy, with people talking about recession. The idea of because it's an election year and everybody's eager to look good, spending more money. That's what we did in the 60s. That's what they criticized mushy-headed liberals for. That's what Republicans, frankly, have done in this state all through the Rockefeller years. I would hope that we've learned the lesson, both from the Democratic liberals and the heavy-spending Republicans that you've got to be prudent. We're doing very well at that over the last 5 years, and I want to work hard to see that we remember those lessons in 88, 89.
In addition to tightening New York State's budget, Governor Cuomo is building a theme of accountability in New York. Fred Dicker, bureau chief of the New York Post, says Cuomo's doing this in case he decides to run for president. Dicker told me the time is ripe to hold the legislature accountable in light of recent scandals.
Has the legislature really been as accountable as it should have been for its spending? We both know it hasn't. It spends $160 or $170 million a year. Nobody really knows where it even goes. So I think the governor's playing two key issues here. One, he's sounding a theme for the state, which he could use nationally. And two, I think he's saying to the legislature, it's time that you guys, now that you're really on a defensive, clean up your act because you're vulnerable.
Do you think he has enough on them at this stage of the game to make them bend even a little more than they have in last year's ethics bill?
I think that never in modern history have they been on the defensive as much as they are now. I think the answer is yes. And I think they run a big risk because obviously the response to his theme would be, Governor, you've been governor for almost five years now. Where have you been for the last 4 years on this accountability issue? I think if the legislature was stronger than it is now, it could come back at him with that response. But I don't think they're going to do that because I think they're so much on the defensive.
And they know better by now not to fool too much with Mother Nature.
I would say.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post. As if they needed it, the state legislature is having even more ethics trouble. It seems as if the legislature just can't see the end of that long, long black tunnel. Recently, two more names have been added to the list of state legislators who have come under fire by District Attorney Robert Morgenthau of Manhattan. Brenda McMahon has more.
Rochester Senator Ralph Kwaciechowski and former Senator Joseph Montalto of Brooklyn have been indicted in the no-show investigation. According to Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, Kwaciechowski and Montalto have spent $50,000 to $100,000 of public money to pay political campaign workers. These latest indictments add 82 counts to the previous 583-count indictment against Senate Minority Leader Manfred Orenstein, his aide Frank Sanzillo, and Senator Howard Babish of Brooklyn. The three were accused in September of using legislative workers to run Democratic Senate campaigns. Kwaciechowski and Montalto have been charged with participating in the taxpayer finance campaign scheme. Montalto, an aide to Orenstein, lost his bid for office after trying to recapture the seat he lost in 1984. Kwaciechowski was reelected. If convicted of all counts, Montalto faces up to 68 years in prison, and Kwaciechowski may face 60 years. According to the indictment, Montalto was charged with using numerous legislative workers to do campaign work. That included at least 3 full-time and 2 part-time workers on his campaign. The charges against Montalto include 13 counts of filing a false instrument, 3 counts of second-degree grand larceny, 1 count of fifth-degree conspiracy, and 1 count of defrauding the government. Kwaciechowski is accused of having 2 full-time workers on his 1986 campaign. Kwaciechowski is also accused of 12 counts of filing a false instrument and 2 counts of second-degree grand larceny. District Attorney Morgenthau says these latest indictments were the last of the Orenstein phase of the investigation, but the overall no-show investigation will continue, this time looking into the State Assembly and the Special Legislative Commissions. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Brenda McMahon.
The garbage crisis in New York State is growing as state and local officials try to figure out what to do with the accumulating waste. Recently, a state official sent a letter to the McDonald's chain asking them to phase out the use of their styrofoam containers and revert back to the cardboard containers they once used. Bruce Robertson has this report.
New York wants McDonald's to stop using styrofoam packaging. Officials say the franchise's heavy use of the styrofoam is adding to the state's garbage problem. Styrofoam is not biodegradable, and New York officials say that it also takes up more space in landfills than paper packaging. Richard Kessel, executive director of the New York Consumer Protection Board, sent a letter to McDonald's asking them to phase out the styrofoam packaging. McDonald's spokeswoman Terry Capastro says that the company has not yet received the letter, but McDonald's sees styrofoam as the best alternative. Capastro says that part of the solid waste problem is the accumulation of paper in the landfills, and returning to paper products would only exacerbate that problem. She also says using paper products only hurts another part of the environment, the conservation of trees. Judy Enck, an environmental activist in Albany, though, says environmentalists have been unsuccessfully trying to persuade McDonald's to go back to all paper packaging to help resolve the garbage disposal problems.
We are running out of places to put our garbage and, more importantly, running out of safe disposal methods. Styrofoam is the last thing that companies should be producing if they're serious about helping us out of this environmental dilemma. Styrofoam is non-biodegradable, which means if you landfill it, it will never disappear. And if you burn it at a garbage incinerator like the Albany Answers plant, it is suspected of causing very serious toxic gas emissions at these facilities. So we feel that there's a very easy and clear alternative to the McDonald's company, that they should go back and begin using recyclable paper products. It doesn't affect their product in any way. People will still buy their hamburgers, and they'd be doing a great service to the state of New York in helping us out of our solid waste dilemma.
Judy Enck, an environmental activist in Albany, she says McDonald's has commissioned an internal study to look at their packaging practices, but she questions whether this is just a ploy to keep up their public image or to really show respect for the environment. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
You may have noticed that you're paying more for your milk. Prices have risen statewide, but nobody's sure why. Maury Small reports.
Milk prices have risen as much as 5% over the past 2 months in upstate New York. Prices also went up downstate, but that was after a sharp price drop in previous months in that area. When New York officials first began trying to determine why prices were rising, they looked first to farmers. Most dairy farmers in New York now belong to the Regional Cooperative Marketing Agency. The RCMA is a price-setting cartel in 11 northeastern states and recently negotiated a higher price for the milk farmers sell to dealers. New York Consumer Protection Board Director Richard Kessel thought that price hike might be the reason for the higher prices we're seeing at the grocery store. But the RCMA says the new price farmers are getting, $14.45 per hundredweight, is not enough to raise prices as much as they've increased at the store. They appear to have convinced Kessel. After he met with farmers, he announced that he suspected the milk dealers had unreasonably hiked the prices that they charge retail stores. This week, some observers began questioning whether the grocery stores themselves are responsible for the higher milk prices. Ronald Pierce, director of Dairy Industry Services for the State Agriculture Department, says some grocery store chains do not compete in milk prices as they do in other products. Overall, supermarkets make a profit of about 1 cent on the dollar. A Cornell University study showed in 1984 that the profit margin for milk was much higher, 56 cents a gallon, in Albany. But spokespersons for the Price Chopper and Grand Union supermarket chains deny that their markups are responsible for the rising milk prices. Joanne Gage of Price Chopper says the chain's cost of milk, the price the chain pays to milk dealers, rose about 3 to 7% in September. The farmers also say it's the dealers who are raising the prices. New York officials are continuing efforts to pinpoint where along the line prices are being hiked and whether the increases might be illegal. State Attorney General Robert Abrams has declared the RCMA price agreement void. He says it's illegal price fixing in violation of federal antitrust laws. Abrams' move has not yet affected the price being paid to farmers, and a state legislative commission thinks Abrams is wrong anyway. The Commission on Dairy Industry Development says that since State Agriculture Commissioner Donald Butcher helped broker the price agreement, The agreement is exempt from federal antitrust laws. The commission has asked both Abrams and Butcher to appear in Albany for questioning within the next 2 weeks. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Maury Small.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen has been working to help an upstate locality get relief for their city's debt. And he talks about the need to educate the younger population in New York. He spoke with Dave Gillette.
I understand that you have been talking with a local official in Glens Falls, Mayor Frank O'Keefe, about some state relief for the city's debt up there. What's the story on that?
We were up in Glens Falls this morning for a regional Adirondack Country economic development meeting and appearance. Frank has got a real problem in the city of Glens Falls as a result of a number of development projects that preceded his administration. He is left with an eroded tax base and enormous city responsibilities for the Civic Center and other regional development facilities and programs, the result of which is the estimates range up to a 50% tax increase. Now, when this would happen in a larger city, obviously you'd have a major crisis, and we would try to pay attention to it and see if there's something the state could do to help. We'll try to give the same kind of attention to a small city, but it's going to be very difficult because most of these arrangements are based on contracts that were entered into with the state government, in some cases with the EDA of the federal government, and it's difficult to change the terms of a contract once it's already in place.
Well, we've seen already problems in the last couple of decades with cities, as you say, larger ones like New York and Yonkers and others across the state. How common is it now that the medium and smaller sized cities are finding themselves in this kind of a problem?
Well, I think in general the fiscal condition of the medium and smaller cities is quite good in New York State. They have lost some revenue sharing and continue to be burdened by static tax bases, but most of the cities seem to be doing fairly well and are in quite good financial condition. Obviously, each year there's a claim by the cities and other municipalities that there's a need for more state assistance, but apart from that, I think that the fiscal situation in most of New York cities is sound.
Now, I understand you've also recently been visiting with some reading educators.
Yes, it's really interesting. The New York Reading Association is the leading literacy group of its kind in America. They get 3,000 people to come to their annual meetings, which are very serious in purpose. And I can't think of anything more important at this particular time than the literacy of New York citizens. So we must improve the teaching of reading in the public schools so that children who have reading problems are given the kind of expert help they need. But we also must pay attention to literacy throughout our society. If New York is going to succeed economically and if we're going to address some of the social problems we face, it's absolutely essential that our citizens be able to read and be able to comprehend this complex world we're facing.
What kind of steps need to be taken to improve reading education?
We are now emphasizing accountability and effectiveness in education, as with other state programs, and we're going to work very hard to involve the private business community and others in the attempt to provide the kind of performance we would like. New York's reading teachers are an extraordinary group, and it's important that their credentials be such that we can be sure that young children who need extra kind of instruction get that from qualified people, and we need to, frankly, increase and continue our support for specialized reading programs, which now get more than $15 million in state funds.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. President Reagan approved federal emergency funds for the 7 counties in upstate New York, giving a total of $12 million for those areas needing assistance after the freak October 4th storm, which paralyzed the Northeast. Brenda McMahon has more.
7 counties in upstate New York have received $13.2 million for relief money after the freak October 4th storm. The counties that will receive the money for cleanup efforts are Albany, Columbia, Dutchess, Greene, Rensselaer, Schenectady, and Washington counties. The other 3 counties which applied for the funds but were rejected were Montgomery, Putnam, and Saratoga counties. Don DeVito, director of the New York State Emergency Management Offices, says the $13.2 million in federal funds will be distributed to all 7 counties as follows.
In this case, the federal assessment has determined that $13 million plus is a bona fide, realistic number. It is not a cap. It's not a ceiling, nor is it a floor. What it is a best assessment at a particular point in time as to what the impact of the disaster is. As we move through the administrative process of identifying specific projects for reimbursement, each community that has experienced a loss will or has expended extraordinary costs in responding and recovering from this disaster, including the state itself, will submit projects. And the cumulative total of all of those eligible projects, based upon federal endorsement of the numbers provided, will determine in the final analysis what the overall amount of disaster relief money will be.
DeVito says the 3 counties which were rejected are in the middle of an appeals process.
There are 2 processes, actually, and both start immediately upon receipt of the president's decision. One is the appeals process. Another is to seek other federal programs. With the appeals process, what we need is new information, additional data, new data, reflecting the impact of the particular disaster. Since obviously the federal decision was based on a certain amount of information, if all we do is go back with that same amount of information, there's no reason to expect any favorable action. But new information, new data, new problems identified, new costs incurred, and so on, will form the basis of our appeal. That appeal process is already underway. It was underway as soon as we received the president's decision.
Localities are given emergency funds according to the costs of individual projects. It's not distributed among counties. The federal assistance is expected before January 1st. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Brenda McMahon.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show was produced and prepared by Brenda McMahon. She had help this week from Maury Small, Dave Gillettley, Bruce Robertson, and Jody Fetner. We hope you enjoyed our show and that you'll tune in again next week for more on what's happening in and around New York, the Empire State. I'm Alan Chartock.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartock is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.